Welcome to yet another cool episode of Bank On It. And today I'm joined by none other than Zanele. Zanele Matome, who is the co-founder and CEO of Wello Health. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me, KK.
It's been a while since we've spoken. So for everyone who's watching, take us through the Wello journey and how you got started on this.
Okay. So Wello started in 2020. So prior to that, I was in business, did business from 2003 up to 2017, doing different types of business ranging from construction and mining. And then in 2019, I made a U-turn, I pivoted. I took a leap of faith, went to Silicon Valley to go and learn about tech startups because I wanted to build something that was sustainable, something that you can take global and something that you can scale. And most importantly, something that has impact. So I went to Silicon Valley for 3 months, came back home to South Africa. And from that trip, then 2020 COVID happened. So Silicon Valley 2019, 2020 COVID happened. And then it was my chance now to say, okay, what can I innovate that has impact, but not only impact for my town in Rustenburg, where I was born and bred, but impact for the whole world, impact for global,
And tell us, take us through that experience being in Silicon Valley. You always hear, you know, it's so cliched, but it's true, right? Your network is your net worth, and the people you meet will open doors for you. I want to touch on that and draw on it. Take me through how you built those networks and actually got to meeting people in a very confined, gate-kept kind of community in Silicon Valley.
Yeah, so what I loved about Silicon Valley, or how I went about that, you know what, I don't know anyone in this place. I don't know anyone in San Francisco, but as an entrepreneur, you make a plan, as they say in South Africa. So I was like, okay, let me create my own incubator program. That's where I went to a website called Eventbrite. So you'd go to Eventbrite and there will be a workshop in the morning in Palo Alto. There'll be an event somewhere during the day at Market Street, San Francisco. Downtown, and there'll be an event at Stanford University. So I told myself that I'll go and attend those events and then start talking to people, hence, you know, opening up your networks. So that's what I started. I started going to those events where you would meet people, you know, what do you do? You know, I do this, I do that, etc. And attend those free workshops at Stanford and do things like office hours, which for me was something that was very new to me, where I sit with you, maybe you're an executive at Twitter, Facebook, or you've exited, and we just have lunch or coffee together, and you tell me about the journey, the pitfalls, etc. So that's how I did it. I just did it consistently for 3 months, just building that network, interacting with people, sharing your journey, being authentic, and and just gaining friendships that are still now here with me now, you know, 5 years after.
That's incredible. So it's constantly putting yourself outside of your comfort zone.
Exactly.
I suppose many people in the audience that are watching this may think, but I'm an introvert and I don't like putting myself out there, and how do I get to meet people but I feel a bit shy? I mean, like, what kind of advice would you give to entrepreneurs, young professionals, people in corporate aiming to build their network but still feel a little bit self-conscious?
Exactly. Like, networking is tough. I'm an extrovert. Okay. It's also hard for me. So I can imagine for introverts as well, it must be harder. But I always say, when you network with people, don't go in there or don't go into a room with the notion of, I just want to take. What do you do? Have interest in people. You know, you go into your room, instead of asking questions like, what do you do, etc., like, what are your hobbies? What makes you happy? What are you currently busy with? A person will tell you that, oh, I'm busy with this fishing course, etc., you know, I'm learning how to fish. And then, you know, you now you interact with the person human to human, because I think we've lost that, and we're losing that human to human interaction. At the end of the conversation, that's when we'll say, oh, now I'm leaving leaving. Oh, what do you do? Where do you work? Oh, I'm at Twitter. I'm at etc. You know, that must be the last thing about you. Just interact with people human to human. You know that you at that meeting or at that room is an event for tech startups, etc. Obviously, you are in the ecosystem. But start to learn to be interested in humans before what they do. That will come at a later stage. So for me, that has been the easiest way to start networking and building that network.
So super organic, authentic.
Authentic.
Just being genuine as opposed to, can I get a deal from this person?
Exactly.
And social media sometimes lends itself to be very transactional. Like, I'm going to send this person a message and send them a pitch. Or send them a cold pitch. And I'm sure you get pitched to a lot.
All
right?
<the time. laughs>
So I want to touch on that because now you're in a position where people pitch to you.
Yes.
It's a great position to be in. Mm-hmm. But in your role growing the startup to where it's, you know, now, you've done a lot of pitches.
Yep. Right? Oh, man.
You've pitched this business a lot. So take me through that first pitch that you did and how you've evolved and the things you've learned in the way you communicate your value in the business and how you actually adequately capture that to different audiences.
So I think the first pitch I did was surprisingly, like, I was building in public.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
When I came back from Silicon Valley, I was just building in public. That's when Welo, I was doing medicine delivery. So I would queue for people in public hospitals myself so that I can understand the whole value chain. So 5 a.m., I would be at George Mukhari Hospital queuing for my clients, collecting the medication, calling a scooter driver, hey, bro, Joe, I'm at the gate. I have this 10 packages. Please go and deliver to my clients. And how I started pitching was that now investors started reaching out. I remember the first investor was from Canada saying, hey, I want to invest $25,000 USD. How do I get on board? What's your valuation? And things like that. And then investors started to come in. And then I had now to start now creating a pitch deck and now starting pitching to other people, be it client or potential investor. So the mistakes that I made in the beginning was that I was focusing too much on the benefits, on selling the benefits instead of the value. Because people, at the end of the day, people do not want shiny. Because you come in, you want a shiny platform, shiny this, shiny team, and all of that, you know, MBA-clad team and all of that. People want the value. What value am I getting from this? Is this value for money? Can I part with my money for this? So that was the mistakes that I made in the first, first pitch deck. And also focusing too much on competition. Yes, there is competition. Competition is good, but then you would focus too much on competition and trying to compete with them on price and things like that and putting that on the deck, which was not a great thing to do. But then when one started to evolve and get better, say, okay, when I pitch the vision. I pitch the value. What are people going to be getting from? What is the vision? For us, the vision is that, you know, when you order food, you'll say, let me Uber you some food, KK. It'll come to your house. I want people to say, let me Welo you. Let me Welo you a nurse. Let me Welo you a doctor. Mom, you're in Rustenburg? I'm in Sandton. Let me Welo you a doctor. So it must be like on the people. There's the value. People must know that when they talk to us, they talk health, they talk convenience, and they talk on demand. So yeah, those are the things that I was learning on the journey.
So getting it down to those basic ingredients as opposed to getting caught in that business school jargon that's complex and hard to understand. So just basically making things simple for people to understand. And that really ties into your business model, right? Which is simplifying healthcare. So take us through that and how you do it.
Yes. So with Welo, it's like you said, simplifying healthcare. So we currently now have a new offering that we've just added a few weeks back, which we call Welo SME, where it's all the services that we've been giving to people, and we say now we're giving them to SME. So you are a saloon owner, or you are a restaurant owner, or a factory owner. You have employees between 6, maximum 500 rands. You know, those are your blue collar employees. They are not on any medical aid scheme, but they they go to government for their health care. I call them the missing middle. They're like, yeah, I can't afford those big net care, etc. But I still need health care. Mm. So what we do is that with our Welo SME package, we say you as the employer with your 6 employees, 10 employees, etc., you're for 385 rands per month. Your employees will get digital doctor consultations. Those are the things that we've been doing from Welo since 2020. Mm. So they consult with the doctor digitally. They get the script. They get sick notes on their phone using WhatsApp or other virtual means. They get their medication delivered to them once every 3 months. Because remember when we started with Welo, the Genesis, we were collecting medication for people who use public health care so that you can go back to you can go to your work, because if I work at a shop, etc., it's no work, no pay. Yep. If I have to go and fetch my medication, I have to take the day off. It's no work, no pay. So now you as the employer, your employee can still come to work. We will go and collect and deliver the medication for them in their workplace. And then a nurse will also come and do checkups once every 3 months at the workplace. So those are the things that we are introducing to the market to simplify healthcare. And we make sure that we really know them and we really do our trial and error before taking it out to the people out there. That's why we started those things in 2020. And now we're going to do it for SME. Then it's going to be stock first. Mm. Then it's going to be people at home, because you don't want to bite more than you can chew, because you always want to deliver value. So you do it face by face.
I love the way you position that, where you get the basics right before you scale.
Yep.
And so frequently entrepreneurs, particularly in our local market, want to walk before they crawl here, right? And I think social media has played a part in that, where you have the survivorship bias.
Yes.
You only see successful entrepreneurs, right? Mm-hmm. So I want to focus on the challenges of being an entrepreneur. For example, you always see people say, I wish I could be a business owner and be my own boss and not work. You know, you're laughing at this because, you know, you've seen this before, right?
Yep.
I don't want to have this 9-to-5. I want to be my own boss, right? Mm-hmm. Let's focus and cover how entrepreneurship, firstly, is not a silver bullet for everything, but also it's not the answer for everyone.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And let's talk about some of the challenges of diving headfirst into entrepreneurship and not having a backup plan, or thinking it's so much better than your office job.
I always say entrepreneurs are a special breed. Mm. It's not for everyone. Mm. You can still be an employee and thrive in what you do, because the first thing, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you must have a high threshold for pain.
Yep.
There's a lot of pain. There's 70% pain and 30% wins all the time. Even if you are at that Elon Musk level, etc. And because my co-founder is here, Moiketsi, and we started paying ourselves salaries only this year. This is when we started having pay slip and paying ourselves salaries. And we started in 2020.
Yeah.
Because you literally have to drink water so that the business grows, so that the team gets paid, so that you get we would get the best from your dev to the doctors, etc. Those people have to be paid a salary. So you drink water and say, you know what, this is for the business. And as an entrepreneur as well, be in that thing of thinking in decades and executing daily. Yeah. Think in decades, execute daily. So that means that you live a life of long game, of, you know, always thinking strategically and not listening to the noise. Because I remember when we started, the noise was like, okay, your competition is doing B2C and B2B, which is now servicing individual clients, servicing business clients at the same time. No, big teams and all of that. And I was like, no, we're going to do it face by face, because we're building something that's bigger than us. Mm. We're building something that I want a person in Kenya to be using Welo, a person in rural US to be using Welo, a person as far as in Rustenburg in my town to be. So you have to build this baby brick by brick, and you will get pressure, be it from investors. You must just be stubborn. Be it from investors, the market, the ecosystem, and all of that, for you to do something shiny, to do it fast, to grow fast, and break fast. That's what they usually say in the tech industry.
Fail fast.
And all of that. But we are in health. We're dealing with people's lives. And we're building a company that I want to see being listed at the New York Stock Exchange, etc. And we have to do it right. But you have to drink water in the process. Mm. And there'll be pain. There'll be times where you're not paid in time. There's no payroll. And 3 a.m., you don't even need an alarm clock. You just wake yourself up. Your problems will wake you up. So people must know that it's not an easy journey. It's fun.
Mm.
It's fulfilling because there's so much purpose. Mm. But it's not an easy journey and it's not for anyone. Mm. And don't do it for people. Shut yourself away from the noise.
Mm.
Do it for your customers. Mm. Those are the only people that matter.
And that really encapsulates it, Sanaya, which is taking passion and driving it into purpose. Because profit itself won't get you to purpose. Because as a startup, you won't be profitable for very long periods of time. Right? And I want to speak about that because during those tough times, you need funding. Funding is an oxygen that powers a startup. And most businesses, you know, I've said it so many times, don't run out of ideas. They run out of cash.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How did you manage those first few years from a capital perspective and a fundraising perspective?
Mm-hmm.
And how did you get support from different people, whether it's banks, investors, etc.? Talk me through your funding journey and how that can help all of the entrepreneurs that are watching this.
Yes. So our oxygen really, at first, it came from our customers.
Mm.
People who are saying, I'm willing to part with my money because there's value in this and I believe in this.
Mm.
So I'll part with my money. I remember when I started with medicine delivery, when I was still solo in the business, I was charging 35 rands per delivery because in my mind, I was figuring that, okay, if I'm paying the scooter driver 25 rand, because it's his petrol, his scooter, etc., I can take 15 rands. But my mess was not messing. Then 2 months into it, I went back to my customers. I was like, guys, I have to increase this to 79 rands.
Mm.
This is why I have to increase this to 79 rands. All of that. Because I didn't count, you know, the use of cell phones, me catching a taxi daily to go and all of those things. And they were like, we're still saving money. Because if it's no work, no pay, it means we're losing around 250 rand per day for us to come and take our money. We'll do that. So it's balancing that thing to say, get money from paying customers and also obviously from your investors. You need to build your tech. You need to do this, offices, etc. So with us, when we started, the investment came from us doing the work. I always tell people, I know it's not sexy and glamorous and all of that. You know, you won't appear on TechCrunch because you didn't raise money, etc. But just build the business and investors will come.
Mm.
That's what we did. I remember when we got the first 25,000 USD, the business was making around 350 rands per month.
Oh.
But because they saw value they were baking the jockey and they were like, "This here's $25,000. What is your valuation? We want to invest." And the second investor came like that. The second investor, the third investor that came with 120,000 USD also came like that. So I was just continue building and focusing on the customers, focusing on servicing the customers, focusing on doing things that don't scale. And your WhatsApp chatbot, you know, calling your customers, you being the support, the finance, the everything, focusing on things that don't scale so that you tweak things. You tweak things and get things working. But there are people who are watching and say, hey, we want to be on board. Even though it's day zero, because that's day zero when you're making your 300 rands per month, etc. So that's how we did our fundraising. And then that's when we got better and then we could go out there and then actually look for funds. And we started getting funding from as far as the US, UK, and also in Cape Town. But it was just focusing and being obsessed with executing and adding value to the client and solving their problem, their pertinent problems.
Mm.
And then, So don't go for fundraising first. build your baby so that you validate it for yourself as well as for the market. Because sometimes you'll be married to an idea, but that idea is just an idea. It's not, it's not that it's not valuable, but it's not feasible.
Yeah.
And the market doesn't want it at the moment. The market is not ready for it. So it's mean you solving your own little problem.
Yeah.
And your friends and family will tell you that it's a brilliant idea. But the most honest people are customers, because they will tell you that it's a brilliant idea with their hard earned money.
Yes.
So build your baby, investment will come, because you need that oxygen, but oxygen will come. Build the baby first.
So you've gone from $25,000 being that first check to raising millions of dollars now, right? Which is a great place to be. Will you have those conversations with investors who are putting millions of dollars into your company? How important is it to have a thick skin and to take on criticism, but still, as you said, be stubborn? How do you balance that? Because on one hand, you have a vision and it's steadfast, it's concrete, it's crystal clear to you. But you have investors who are chasing returns and want something maybe slightly different. How do you navigate those difficult conversations?
Yes. So I think with that one, I always say an investor is like a marriage partner. Because remember, when they put in the money, this you're looking at a 7 to 10 year relationship or marriage. So when you bring people on board, you must, yes, you're not going to bring people who are going to agree with you on anything. Thing you are going to be clashes and all of that, healthy clashes. So you bring people who buy into the vision and who understand who you are as a person and who believe in you, that you can man and run this ship. So bring people who are long game. Like I believe in bringing people, be it employees, suppliers, investors, who are in it for the long game. So if you bring investors like that, you will sometimes, you know, butt heads and all of that. But the vision will always stay the same, because now you are of the same values. So I do not want to be married to people who are in here to get rich quick or make money quick. So those are the conversations that you have with your potential investors before they come in. And as an entrepreneur, don't be afraid to walk away. There are deals that we have walked away from because of valuation, because of value system. We can see that we don't align with this person. This person is, you know, you can just see that they're a bully from the word go. Because when you get married to that person now, as an investor, when you bring them on your cap table, remember the power dynamics are not the same.
Yes.
So that person will bully you. Those are the, you see the red flags, just like in relationships. You see the red flags. Some of them are too red. You cannot tell them green. Walk away. Don't take money for the sake of taking money.
I love that, because it's almost like you want to date those investors before you actually commit to this long-term partnership. Now, investors are incredibly important in the startup ecosystem, and so are banks. I mean, our show is powered by Capitec, right? So, and we're having this conversation. Take me through some of the things entrepreneurs and young business people should be looking at when looking to source capital from financial institutions like banks. What are some of the things, you mentioned a business plan. What are some of the things you should have in place before you approach a bank or an investor to say, hey, please fund my startup?
Yes, I think a business plan or pitch deck, that's the first thing that you should have, especially when you're approaching banks. And you must also be able to sell your story or sell your business, sell the vision as well. I believe that, you know, your business plan, your pitch deck, it's a document, and you must also have your financials in order. Start having your, even if you're making that 100 rand, 300 rands per month, take yourself like a serious business from day zero. I know you are, you know, in the early days, you won't afford a CFO, etc. But get a bookkeeper, and as time goes by, get a fractional CFO. If you can afford a fractional CFO for your 30,000 rands, 40,000 per month, 25,000 rand, get that. Treat yourself like a big business from day one, so that now when you go and approach Capitec and say, hey, this is me, this is the business, I'm looking for funding, be it as bridging finance or to expand, etc. Now you go in there professionally. You go there with your financial house in order. Mm. You go there with your business house in order. And you also go there and sell them the vision that this is what you're going to be funding, but this is how it's going to look like in 5 years. And these are the 6 months plan, 6 monthly plans of us getting to that 5 years. So be strategic, be intentional, and just treat yourself like a big business from day zero.
I like that because it talks about milestones and accountability.
Yep.
And so often you have entrepreneurs that can't conceptually think about the future because they're worried about survival today.
Yep.
It's like, how do I get here? How do I get there? But you touched on such an important point, which is surrounding yourself with the right team.
Yep.
You mentioned fractional CFO. You mentioned investors, etc. What are some of the team members and the people in the early part of your journey that have really made such a huge difference in supporting this vision for you?
I think my co-founder has made a huge difference. He also serves as the COO in charge of our operations. And how he became the co-founder, or how he came on board, there was a time where we had 90 invoices, 90, that were not paid, and the clients kept sending them back and forth. So it was not the client's mistake, it was our mistake. Like, we were not just getting it right, the calculations and all of that. But because he's very smart with Excel and all of that, like, I'm an entrepreneur, I just want to write proposals, please don't tell me about Excel.
Yeah.
So he sorted that out, and we managed to get paid, and he started now helping out for free. And I was like, man, come on board. Come on board and just work with me. And he also had a taxi business. It was not his business, from his family's business. So when times were tough, we'll literally go and wait by the highway, wait for the taxi driver to come from Mozambique.
Yeah.
We need that cash to pay nurses and things like that. So he put skin in the game. And I was like, no, come on board, come become a co-founder. And because he's very good with operations on the ground, and then he became a COO, and now he trained our people that we hired as operations. So it was very good to have that one. And I also call him the party pooper, because, you know, as an entrepreneur, I want to go bold or spend on this.
Yes.
And he would come and just be a party pooper. No, we're not going to spend on this. There we go. So you need somebody like that as well to balance you out. You know, you need your left brain. I'm more of a right brain type of person.
Yeah.
He's the left brain, the logical one, and all of that. So we balance each other nicely. Yeah.
You know, you spoke about skill in the game, and it's so important because it's so easy. And I found this as being an entrepreneur myself. It's so easy to spend other people's money all the time, because it's there's a different sense of accountability. And I think even when it comes to bank funding, you want to make sure that you signal your own commitment and your own cash.
Yeah.
That you have, and you know, people think skin in the game is just cash, but it's also your assets and your time and your level of commitment. And so, you know, what I'd like to really drive home for everyone watching this is you want to make sure you're putting in an effort that justifies and validates the outcome for you, right? No one's looking at you and saying, hey, I'm going to fund 100% of the startup and 100% of equity. And it's something I'd like to close off on, Zanine, because so many young entrepreneurs and young businesses, not young people, give up too much for too little
on. Oh, man.
And I know you feel very passionate about this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about how easy it is to give up so much of your startup for so cheap early on, because your valuation's different.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really have a sense of what's going on. And sophisticated investors can be sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And they can come in and they can, you know, strong arm you.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have to say to young entrepreneurs looking to either sell a stake or dilute down early on, and how should they be navigating that part?
Yeah. So my advice to them is that, just like I said earlier, they must always play the long game, because I think our mistakes as entrepreneurs, you know, with young businesses, etc., is that you look at that investor who's bringing in 10 million rands off the bat, or even 2 million rands investment off the bat, your business is still in idea stages, etc., and you see yourself paying yourself like 120,000 of the, because if I get this 2 million, oh my gosh, because I've just resigned as an investment banker, etc.
Yeah, it means
now my lifestyle is not going to change.
Yes.
People are not going to laugh at me.
Yeah.
I'm still even using Uber, so I'm only getting a car this month. So, like, you know what? I'm going to live that life, and now I'm the boss of my own company. So there's that whole prestige. Learn to walk away from that such deals. Mm. Because if it comes with such high amounts of money off the bat, it means your valuation is so low. And it means now they end up going in at, what, 30% or even 40%, etc. You know, and that's your first investor. Mm. You're still going to be working the path. The Series A coming in, you still want your business to expand outside of the South African borders, etc. So by the time you get there, now you no longer have, you're no longer incentivized. Mm. You no longer want to wake up in the morning. You know you only own 5% of this business because you gave away too much too early because you wanted to eat now.
Yeah.
That thing of instant gratification is not only in social media. It also works in your entrepreneurs, etc. Because it means I'm going to drive that Mercedes now. I'm going to stay in that $1 million house now and all of that. So, yeah, learn to play the long game. Learn to drink water. Make sure that that business has value. Build that baby so that now when you go into those rooms, now you have negotiation power.
Mm.
When you go to those rooms, now the power dynamics are not extremely skewed.
Mm.
And now you take care of that baby. Take care of your cap table. By the time you exit or by the time you IPO, then there's value for you. Now you know that, you know what, I used to drink water for 5 years or so, but now I see value. So yeah, don't take money for the sake of money.
Play the long game.
Play the long game. Yeah, play the long game. Use taxis and all of that, you know. Pay yourself a stipend. You will get to a time where you pay yourself that market-related salary and all of that, yeah.
That's such good advice, Anele. Mm. So thank you so much for sharing. Everyone wants to be in a private jet and drive a Rolls Royce and, you know, be their own boss, be on the cover of Forbes, but they don't see the hustle. So I'm really grateful for you sharing such an authentic, real, genuine experience of what it's like to go from passion to profit and, you know, run such an incredible business. So, you know, on behalf of everyone on the show and, you know, Team Capitech, thank you so much for joining us. Really look forward to supporting your journey and looking forward to all the cool stuff you have coming in the future.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us on another incredible episode of Bank On It.